podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Jay here for Stretford Paddock. This is the Tier 1 podcast. Joining me is Joe Smith, not Ronaldo Brown, but always good to have a change.
How you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right. Not much to talk about, though, is there?
No, it's just one of those boring weeks, isn't it, where nothing happens.
Just same old, quiet day at Manchester United. Yeah. Also, we've got a special guest. Henry Winter joins us again from The Times. Henry, thanks for coming on the channel again.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. It's all a bit quiet, and it's not really a lot to discuss, but we'll try our best. I've just been reading your recent article on Manchester United. I think you used terms like shambolic and dithered when you're talking about United and how it's being run. Just sum up why you think the club keeps getting things wrong and why it is just such a mess, really.
Because there's a disconnect between the owners and the club. When I go to Manchester United, there is a football club in there, but I'm almost sort of fighting my way through the commercial side to get that. Look, this is nothing new. This goes back sort of 20 years. This predates the Glazers. But I just think that if you do have distant owners, and this is not simply a Manchester United issue, Liverpool have had it, although they've put a better structure in place. Arsenal have certainly had it with Kroenke, although they put a better structure in place now. And Josh Kroenke, Stan's son, is being more visible. But the problem with the Glazers, they're holed up in the Everglades. They're taking the money out, your money, not theirs, by the way, in their dividends. And the whole thing has just become a financial transaction for them rather than a sort of footballing or an emotional engagement. And I think when you have that distance, you don't have the immediacy of reaction. My local club to here, much smaller club, Leicester City, but they have an owner in Top. Obviously, tragically, his father passed away. But they're far more immediate. When decisions need to be made, there's a far quicker structure. Chelsea, Abramovich is obviously in different parts of the world, but with Marina Granovskaya, they've got someone who is basically his voice within the club, who is within the building. I think when you've got that distance between Florida and Old Trafford, you've got issues, regardless of how well connected and how often he communicates with that Ed Woodward communicates with Florida. You've got that disconnect there. I think if you have owners, they should actually be far more visible. I know they'll get stick if they turn up, but they should be far more visible, talking to you guys, coming on programs like this, and also turning up in matches and feeling the mood of what the Manchester United away fans are thinking, the Manchester United home fans are thinking, not simply just ignoring social media. So there is that sort of huge disconnect there. And I think in headline terms, Manchester United has got to remember it's a football club first and a commercial operation second.
No, I agree. I agree with all of that. And, it just does seem to be sort of this never-ending cycle that we're in of one manager coming in and nothing really changing. At the minute, For now, it's Michael Carrick who's in the hot seat. You know him quite well. You co-wrote his autobiography. What do you think he's going to bring to the role, even if it is only for a few matches?
Well, I wish he was 10 years younger and playing in central midfield, because I think it would solve some of your problems in terms of shielding a shaky back line. He would also ping the ball out, because of the way he can play the ball to release all that talent, underperforming talent you've got out wide. I think what he will bring is a bit more balance to the team. I think there'll be a bit more front foot. I think because if you look at the coaches that Carrick played under during his career, the individuals like Martin Jol at Spurs, who he found very uplifting because of his tactics, because of his man management. Obviously, Sir Alex, who he still calls, the boss, the inspiration that he took from him. And then learning, partly through their mistakes, of David Moyes, who kind of froze, in the position and thought he was still at Everton rather than a far bigger club in Manchester United. And then Van Gaal, who was just too much into detail, his relentless detail. And even the little things like sending emails to players and then putting little trackers on them just to see whether the players had actually looked at the emails and were going through the clips that he'd sent them about the performance. And I think Carrick probably, I'm talking from my own sort of perspective of it, he probably took from that man management of players is as important as the sort of, the forensic detail. ditto with Jose Mourinho when he came in. So I think Carrick's obvious strength through his people skills. I mean, you've met him. He's quite shy. He's not particularly wanting headlines or whatever. He just wants to play. He wants the team to be the star. It's the way he played. It's the way he lives his life. But I know when Moyes left, Carrick looked at himself in the mirror and went, what have I done wrong here? Should I have done more? Did I miss that tackle in that game? Should I have played that pass in that game? I think it'll bring accountability. There's one thing I was going to say about Carrick. I think the way he is, you know, going into training as a coach, just as he did as a player, wanting to give everything in training, in a match, playing for the shirt, the pride. You know, he's always wanted to manage Manchester United. He's got this brief window now, however long it is, 1, 2, 3 games before they get an interim. And actually, when we talk about shambles, you've actually got a caretaker. You know, this is Manchester United, the biggest club in the world, not short of a bob or two. There should be succession planning. They should have more things in place to say, right, we'll get someone in. So look, that's by the by. That's not Carrick. Carrick, it was interesting when Manchester United had their player of the year, so I think it was in 2018, and everyone knew that Michael was going to stand down. And there was at the do, there was, you know, the lights dimmed and the video came on, and players and people in, you know, important people in Carrick's life did these little sort of video tributes. And one of them was from Wayne Rooney, and it said, Michael brings a calming influence to the team. And I think that's probably what Manchester United need now. They need someone to go into the dressing room to have a word with Harry Maguire. Harry Maguire, we saw in the summer, I mean, I covered all England's games in the summer at the Euros. Harry Maguire was voted in the team of the tournament, despite having a slow start because he was coming back from injury. There was a good defender in Harry Maguire. I understand the criticism of him, and I bumped into him at St. George's Park in the recent international break. And he's obviously very hurt by this, but he needs to realise he's captain of Manchester United. That is a huge honour. And he has to be accountable. He's got to raise his game. And I think because of Carrick's people skills, his quiet advice, he will actually, you know, he will bring that from him. Carrick's very, very popular, A, because of what he's like as a player, B, because of what he's like as a person, but also because what he's like as a coach. Now, obviously, Manchester United look, from my layman's eye, too undercoached at the moment. They need to be more drilled in defensive organisation and that. So Carrick's got to show that he can do that. But, you know, I've spoken to players that he's worked one-on-one with, and he said, listen, he's really improved, you know, in, you know, parts of my game. You know, when he would sit down with Paul Pogba, this was 2-3 years ago, sit down with Paul Pogba and go through clips with him and just said, listen, you are such a good player. You know, this was before the World Cup. He said, you can go on and do whatever you like in the world because you are so good. So I think in a very quiet, non-hairdryer way, he will be a player whisperer. I think he will help players. But you know what? Ultimately, whatever we do in our jobs, your jobs, my jobs, we're responsible for our performances. And Manchester United players have let the shirt down. They've got to play with more pride. They've got to play with more professionalism. They are well paid. You know, when they go on the pitch, they shouldn't be thinking about their paychecks. They should be thinking about the victory and representing Manchester United. The incredible support that you guys have given the team. And also, until obviously towards the end of Vicarage Road, had given Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And I think that it's about time the players paid you guys back for that support. Because I tell you what, other clubs would have turned earlier.
No, yeah, I completely understand that. Completely agree. In terms of the differences between Michael Carrick and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, what do you think the main difference is in their terms, sort of their approach to coaching?
I think you have to understand, to be Manchester United manager is not just simply about turning up at Carrington, having a coffee, getting the coaches together, and then going down to training for 2 hours. The I wouldn't call it pressures, but the actual workload that a Manchester United manager has is absolutely crazy. I spoke to Jose about it once, and he was saying, like, after a game, we were talking about the sort of the English tradition of going for a drink with the opposing manager. And he said, well, it's actually quite difficult when you're Manchester United manager, because for an hour afterwards, you've got to go and do all different forms of media, and particularly overseas broadcasters now with all these lucrative overseas television deals. You've got to do that. You've got to go into the sponsors' lounge, probably pop into the boardroom as well. So being Manchester United manager, you know, you're not a head coach. You have to do all these things. You're almost a general manager in a way. And I think that's where Manchester United have got to move away from that. Solskjaer should have, I know he did delegate and he had trust in McKenna and Carrick to go and take the training sessions. But actually, I think nothing beats having the manager actually feet on the ground, boots on the ground, at Carrington, on the training pitch, keeping an eye on players, looking at the body mood of a Mason Greenwood. How can I get him better? He should be England's centre forward with Harry Kane. He should be going to the World Cup. What is it about Mason Greenwood at the moment? What is it about Harry Maguire's position that he can get caught out of position? Why is it that Lindelof seemed to be more worried about not giving away a handball penalty when Watford are attacking than actually preventing a goal? What is it about Aaron Wan-Bissaka? Do I need to sort of talk to all these little things that sort of players, just tweaking players' games, working with their personalities, lifting their spirits? A manager really needs to be on a training ground there. I think that's something that Manchester United have got to juggle, whether Darren Fletcher does more or John Dermott does more of the training side, sorry, of that sort of the general manager side. I think that has to be, you know, as addressed. But I hope Michael just gets out on the training ground and works.
Yeah, you mentioned before about how the players have almost, and this tends to happen at every club, I think, when a manager is on the brink of being sacked, the players stop being criticised almost. And it's almost the bad performances are used to turn the mirror toward the manager and say, look how bad your players are playing. But some of the performances we've seen from the players are borderline pathetic, aren't they, at times, where you just think you're not only are you not playing for the manager, but you aren't playing for the shirt, you aren't playing for the fans. And I think, you know, there needs to be, like you said, a little bit more sort of ownership of those performances. But short term, obviously Carrick is very short term, and then we've got this slightly longer short term, as you mentioned, the farce behind that already, with the interim coming in. But do you think Carrick can turn that around? Because we've got half a dozen or so players in the squad at the minute. You mentioned a couple of them already, who are not just underperforming, but look like, you know, barely performing. Can Carrick turn that around quickly? Because this game tomorrow is a huge game that we've got coming up in terms of the future of the Champions League.
I think it can be an interesting statement of intent when you see Carrick's first team sheet, whether Donny van de Beek is in. And I know, I can understand the appreciation of him. I'm an admirer of him for what he's done in previous clubs, and also for the Dutch national team. There's a fantastic player in there. But I also think he brings, I know he maybe his best position is more sort of almost like a sort of number 10. You got Bruno Fernandes, who himself, he's got to look at his own game at the moment, because he's not been playing well, certainly by the standards of his first 2 years at United. I think it's going to be interesting to see that first team share. I'd like to see Donny van de Beek given a start. I just think that would set a tone. You've got a player there who is desperate to play, who sounds, from everything you hear about Donny van de Beek, is a consummate professional. You haven't heard a squeak of protest about him. He's gone about his work of training. I would love to see him start, just to break up the sort of the whole sort of McFred issue in the centre. I mean, McTominay, I'm a big fan of McTominay. I mean, I saw him during the Euros, and there is a good player there. But, and this is, I have to say, it's an indictment of Solskjaer, is that players haven't trained on under Solskjaer. You know, you look at the top managers, you look at what Tuchel's done with Chelsea, and he's made good players better. He's organised them. OK, so he's brought Lukaku in, but actually they're playing without Lukaku recently, and they've been terrific, just because you've got a very good coach there, a good man manager there. And I think Carrick will work like that. But I think Donny van de Beek, he's you know, give him the chance, because I think Manchester United, two defensive pivots, that for me isn't the Manchester United way.
It's almost become a sort of a political and symbolic thing at this point as well, hasn't it? McFred in there, like, you know, when they're playing, it's a sign that we're playing defensive. We're not, you know, coming out of our shell. We're trying to just lock things down and hope for the best. So, yeah, I think we might see a bit more of that. Moving forward then, looking at maybe the interim or the one before the next, I don't know how it's going to work. Like you said, there's a bit of a shambles going on there. But looking forward then after Michael Carrick, because obviously he's supposedly a very sort of short-term option, Pochettino's spoken, you've spoken to him recently. He's someone that's been spoken about across the media today, especially links with him joining Manchester United. Do you think he is United's main target? Do you think he was someone that would suit the job? And you know, sort of almost more importantly, do you think he's someone we could get? Because he's at PSG, arguably one of the biggest jobs in management these days. And yet there seems to be talk of unrest, and he doesn't like the amount of power he has there. There's always, you know, a sort of an in and out swinging door of managers at PSG as well. Is Poch the guy, do you think?
In next summer, I would be surprised if he moved now. Look, anything's possible in, yeah, in football. Manchester City might do you a favour if they gave him PSG a whacking on Wednesday. I mean, he's working with Lionel Messi, who's probably the top three footballers of all time. He's got Neymar, he's got Kylian Mbappe. He's got, you know, he's playing fantasy football there. As a coach, does he necessarily want to walk away from that? He's got owners who will sort of back him. He's got, obviously, Leonardo, the sporting director as well. He's got, you know, maybe there are one or two sort of issues there. But you know what? Pochettino has never been a manager who sort of demanded loads and loads of players. He quite likes working with a group. But he is a long-term process, man. He likes to develop teams. You saw it with Tottenham. I mean, we're coming back to, did he make players better? And he does. And it's very interesting when you talk to Pochettino. He doesn't see, you can ask him about something to do with him. He said, are you living in a hotel in Paris, which he still is 10 months after, which is, you know, probably encouraging from Manchester United's perspective. But he always talks about we. Every answer back is a we. And I thought, this is all a bit royal. But actually, it's nothing to do with that. It's because he's got, you know, he's three close coaches, and they're very much a group. It's very much a, he talks, you know, if he gets an award, he immediately shares it around with his other coaches. And they work so well on the training ground. And they've all got slightly complementary characters. In fact, one of them is number two. I helped do his media training at the pro license at St. George's Park. And he's such an engaging individual. Now, okay, so having a coffee with a journalist is no indicator that you can actually manage Messi. Mm. But it's still, they are very engaging characters, good tactically. You can see an identity. I could describe what a Pochettino team is. I certainly couldn't with a Solskjaer team. I think you've lost your identity. And I think you might need someone who can bring your identity back. But I think also it has to be an identity that chimes with Manchester United's traditions. And I think Pochettino would do that in terms of his commitment to the homegrown, in terms of his commitment to attack. I also think, like, I don't know Erik ten Hag particularly well, but just talking to people in Holland, I think he would do that as well. But, you know, you talk about Erik ten Hag, you could do with Edwin van der Sar coming back as well, just in terms of having that more football expertise in the club. But yeah, look, Pochettino is, he's a very engaging character. He'll get the media on side. But, you know, with respect, I'm sure Jose Mourinho would say this, what's Pochettino won yet? You know, I think he does. Okay, so he's had one trophy in France, and he's 10 points clear in Ligue 1 at the moment, so he's likely to win that, as PSG should do. But I think he possibly would come, because PSG is quite a political club. I mean, I read some of that, he might move because Manchester United will offer him a lot of money. I don't think PSG's owners are exactly short of a bubble tea.
Yeah, that's the one thing they're not lacking, isn't it, in terms of what you can offer a manager. It sounds like you think he would be a good fit at United. I think he, like, some of the style of play stuff. I think the one concern, like you mentioned, would maybe be when things aren't going well, if 6 months, 8 months, a year into the job, we do lose a few games, he can't really fall back and say, look at all these things I've won, trust me, it'll come good, which may be a bit of an issue. Pochi, obviously, we mentioned, you briefly mentioned Ten Hag there. We're also linked with, you know, Zidane and Laurent Blanc on a short-term basis, and Brendan Rodgers is another one that we keep hearing. The fact that we're linked with so many managers, and the fact that, like you mentioned before, we've got this interim leading into the full-time role, do you think that they sort of know what they're doing? Do you think they have a number one target at Man United? Or does the fact that, maybe if you want to look on the positive side, the fact that we're saying it's going to be an interim to the end of the season suggests we're going to go for one of these slightly less attainable managers? We're not just going for the easiest, most available option. Is there any positive to take from the fact that we're doing it this way? And if there is, you know, who do you think we are sort of leaning towards? Because from a fan's perspective, it seems as though it's just a, do you want to join the cult? Okay, no, fair enough. Do you want to join? Yeah, but not till, so, like, it doesn't seem like they know what they're doing at the moment.
I mean, they made a mistake after the Liverpool game they should have sacked Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I mean, I've been a sort of long-term supporter of Solskjaer, partly because I think managers should be given a chance, partly because you could see what he was trying to do in terms of changing the atmosphere and the spirit and the mood post-Mourinho. There was some sign of progress, certainly in terms of improving the squad, certainly in terms of the league finishes. Was it 6-3-2? I think a huge miss for him was the Europa League final. I think the landscape would have been different and all that. But I just think, having watched the Liverpool game, or was that the Liverpool game, I just thought that's unforgivable. He should have been sacked that day. Surprisingly, well, not surprisingly, because they are the kings of ditherers, they would say it was loyalty. But Manchester United's board just let slip a golden moment to get Antonio Conte. Because if you're looking at the sort of the elite coaches of Europe, you know, you're talking only about sort of five or six, you know, obviously Klopp, Pep, Tuchel, individuals like that. But you put Conte in there because he is a serial winner. Because you saw him yesterday in the Spurs game, the way he turned things around against Leeds at halftime, and also that emotional engagement. Okay, it might be slightly Machiavellian, it might be slightly for show, but actually there's something about Conte that gets the crowd going. I never understood that with Solskjaer. I know it's not his personality, he's the sort of slightly more sort of dignified Norwegian, but sometimes you do need a few emotional fireworks on the touchline. Ferguson was the master at it, coming out, and whether he's having a go at the linesman, having a go at the fourth official, having a go at his defence, having a go at the opposition manager, whatever, just to sort of inject some energy. It reminded me of something that Roy Keane said the other day, that sometimes he would just go and plough into an opponent to make himself feel better, to get the fans going. And actually, I kind of like that, because everyone needs a fast starter. And I think Conte is a fast starter. You can see that. So I just thought they missed out on that opportunity. But I think in terms of what you're saying, in terms of longer term targets, it'll be Pochettino and Ten Hag. And I have no inside information, but I just think that is kind of the sort of direction of travel. And I think it will be, but those two wouldn't come until next year.
Yeah, we've heard recently that Ed Woodward could be delaying his departure. What sort of a difference do you think it'll make to the club, to United, when he does leave?
Depends whether you get David Gill back.
Yeah,
I mean, David Gill leaving at the same time as Sir Alex was so damaging to the club. I totally understood why he wanted to go. He said that, you know, felt he was so sort of tied up with Sir Alex. But I think if Gill had stayed on and just sort of helped with things, I think maybe the post-Ferguson era might have been slightly less bumpy. I mean, Woodward has many faults, and obviously he should have stayed as on the financial side. He's absolutely brilliant at the noodle deals and all that. He's not a bad person. I have to say, I didn't enjoy the fact when one or two Manchester United fans went over and sort of threatened his house. I don't know whether there was anyone in it at the time. I think United fans should be above that. It does show the emotions that get stirred by football, by supporting. But I just think for such a huge club, you need someone with more football expertise in that position. I know he's trying to sort of slightly move away from sort of, you know, the transfer sides and all that. But I can't imagine you lot will be having too much of a whip round for his leaving present. But someone like Van der Sar, and I'm not saying that Edwin would leave Ajax, where he's doing a brilliant job, and obviously it hasn't got, you know, the sort of the scale of Manchester United, but it's still the same, you know, skills, juggling the commercial and the financial and the footballing, dealing with people, dealing with the image of the club. I just think someone like him, I'm not saying he would even dream of coming back, I just think you need someone like him, you need more football expertise. But look, this is a general issue in football. If I look at the Arsenal board, how much football expertise there? When England pick their next manager, if I look at the Football Association board, how much football expertise in there? What we need, and this is going slightly off track here, but what we need is former players, not simply to go into the studio, not simply to go into coaching, but also to actually do general management courses, so that they can, not their pro license, but so that they can, they know how to read a spreadsheet, so they can come into it. We need more Gary Nevilles. I know Gary Nevilles is like Marmite to some people, but actually, if you sit down with Gary, he talks so much sense about the game. And you would imagine if a Gary Neville was in the board at Manchester United, they wouldn't be making mistakes. And you can argue he's been too loyal to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, but actually, your board needs more football expertise. But that's, look, that's an issue for all clubs, for most clubs.
Yeah, and it's sort of following on from that. Do you think the next manager is going to be hamstrung in terms of the success that is possible? Because, you know, we've spent loads of money. It's not, you know, obviously the Glazers, none of us are big fans of the Glazers whatsoever, and that's a bit of an understatement. But we have spent a lot of money in the last few years, and we still seem maybe not quite as far off as we have done in the past, but, you know, pretty far off a title challenge at the moment. What do you think needs to change? Because, you know, Woodward may go, but it's the Glazers and the board who are picking his replacement. It's not as though he goes and, you know, someone just pops up who we all really like, who's really knowledgeable. They just pick the next one and, you know, presumably the cycle starts again. What can change within the current system at United for Manchester United to be more successful?
You can spend money, and what Solskjaer spent, 400 million, I'm not sure how correct that figure is, but actually, and how much of that he wanted to spend. But you know what? I mean, I've talked to you guys before. I talked to Manchester United fans walking into the ground, texts, emails, the great joy of social media, exchanging sort of views and opinions and listening to what people say. You guys have been saying it for ages. We need a proper defensive midfielder and we need a proper right back. When I say proper right back, someone who can get forward and deliver across, someone who is reliable defensively. Wan-Bissaka can be good one-on-one defensively, but he can get caught out positioning and his delivery into the box isn't good enough yet. When you think of the quality of a Reece James, you could have got Kieran Trippier in the summer. Kieran Trippier obviously is from your, I think he's from Bury, it's from your neck of the woods. I'm sure he would have come back after his success in Spain, winning the league. You know, he's an England international. He's also the type of sort of tough guy. You know, I looked at Manchester United at Watford. Who was actually shouting people out? Where were the Keens? I know it's a slightly softer society, softer generation. People, you know, the hairdryer, the Roy Keane scream at people doesn't necessarily work so much. But there still is a place for that. If I get something wrong at work, I expect a bollocking, quite right, because it's, you know, you have to keep on the toes. There's no one doing that. Kieran Trippier is a leader like that. He's got a voice. So you needed someone like him. You know what? If you looked at your team now and you said, right, whoever's going to come in as coach, if you put Declan Rice in your central midfield, and if you put or Jude Bellingham, and if you put Kieran Trippier at right back, that's probably 150 million quid's worth of expenditure, top whack, obviously wages on top of that. You know, it's not simply about spending, it's about spending it correctly. Mm. And I think you missed a trick in the summer. Now, Solskjaer wanted Trippier. So is there some sort of disconnect between maybe some people at the club didn't feel that Trippier would sell many shirts, but he's an England international. He's exactly what you needed at right back. More competition for Wan-Bissaka. And I think it would have just given you... So look, you've got the money. You can say, as you do, that, you know, the Glazers have put their hands in their pocket. Or, to be fair, the Glazers have put their hands in your pocket and invested in the playing strength. But look, I'm a big Jadon Sancho fan, and I'm sure he will develop and do well, particularly under Carrick, who's a supporter of his. But you're not short of talent out wide. Mm. So anyway, this is, and also you've got to address certain issues of players at the club. I'm a huge Juan Mata fan as a person. As a player as well, but what is Juan Mata doing at Manchester United? You know, I can understand it if the club had said, right, go and work with the under 14s, go and be skills coach of the under 15s, as well as playing in, you know, 10, 12 matches a season, coming off the bench, helping us like that. I just admit, maybe he is, and maybe I'm not sort of so au fait with what's going on at the academy. But I look at the squad, and I'm thinking, is he still there? You know, I mean, it's. So it's not simply about bringing people in. You've got to spruce your squad at the moment, particularly in a post-COVID climate when finances are to an extent an issue and huge wages. You know, at some point you've got to get them off the books.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, Henry, it's always great chatting to you, even though it can be a bit depressing. not from your fault, but when we look at where Manchester United
it
are.
It all seemed so promising at the start of the season, didn't it?
When Ronaldo came, we were thinking, you know, we're going to have a title challenge, and now, you know, Solskjaer's gone, Carrick's in for a few games. We don't know what's happening longer term. You know, it is a little bit frustrating, to say the least. Henry, thanks for coming on the channel. We always appreciate your support, and we'll hopefully talk to you again when things might look a little bit more stable, perhaps, at Manchester United. Who knows?
Do you know what? Manchester United will always be big, and they will always have a strong future because of you guys, because of your support. If I write a Manchester United story, it gets more reaction than any other club.
There you go, you see.
Thank you very much.
Bigger reaction. So we've still got that to hold on to, if nothing else.
For now.
Thanks a lot. Thanks, Henry. Speak to you soon.
Cheers.
It's always good chatting to Henry.
Always good.
The fact that, you know, he is probably the most respected, well-respected journalist in football. Mm. Yeah, you can see he's got such an enthusiasm and passion for it. Talks a lot of sense, even if that sense is depressing.
He likes United fans as well. Yeah, I like it. Yeah, it's good. And he always makes me feel slightly optimistic, even though obviously he talks how poor things have run above. There aren't enough football people going on. They don't have a plan for the new manager.
Shambolic was the word he used.
I'm going, Michael Carrick's the next...
give him the deal. Give him a contract in the season.
But yeah, obviously, we're in that horrible kind of wait and see period, aren't we? Where there's no certainty. We don't know what's coming. We don't know what to expect. But the games are going to be here before we know it. So yeah, it's going to be fun. And obviously, thank you to Henry for coming on and chatting with us. But
yeah, make sure you go and check out Henry at the Times. His recent article as well, where he talks about what's going on with Solskjaer and the Glazers as well. It's always good stuff. You know where to find Joe. Joe Smith, 93, on your socials. You know where to find me as well, Jay Motti. Don't forget as well to hit like, share and subscribe. Let's get to 700,000 subscribers by the end of the season. This has been the Tier 1 Podcast with Henry Winter. Thanks for watching. Sports Social Podcast Network.